Today we speak to the chairman of the board, Mr. Tony Cochrane.
It's like any job, you have moments where it's good, moments where it's bad. But look, no, overall we're pretty, I think we're pretty happy with the way things are going. And 5 years on, you know, I certainly, I'm endorsed Mr. Chairman, I think it's for another 2 years. I certainly plan on seeing those 2 years out, and, you know, we'll have a bit of a review of looking at them.
Tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
This year's Formula One season has come to a finish at Suzuka in Japan, and now with a report from Suzuka is Peter Slater of the BBC.
Michael Schumacher has been in a class of his own all weekend, quickest in qualifying by 0.7 seconds and winning the race serenely. It was his 9th victory of the season, and Ferrari's only disappointment would be that their other driver, the Brazilian Rubens Barrichello, was unable to collect enough points to finish second in the Drivers' Championship. Barrichello was on a 3-stop strategy, but in order to do that, he had to pass Juan Pablo Montoya's Williams at the start. Barrichello managed it, but Montoya immediately retook him, and once all the pit stops were completed, Montoya was second, Barrichello 5th. David Coulthard finished 3rd for McLaren, ahead of Mika Hakkinen, who's taking a year's break from the sport. The top 6 was completed by Ralf Schumacher, whose race was spoiled when he was given a 10-second stop-go penalty for crossing the white line at the end of the pit lane. No fairy tale ending for Jean Alesi. The Frenchman, competing in his 201st and final Grand Prix, had to retire after his Jordan car was involved in a crash with Finland's Kimi Räikkönen.
Yes, of course, as we say there, the Formula One season beginning very much as it began with Michael Schumacher on top. Interesting, though, to see this year the presence of Williams coming to the fore with their BMW power, and of course Juan Pablo Montoya there finishing second in Japan, put up a good fight throughout the race, and I'd say we'll see more of him next year. As mentioned, sad to see John Alesi bowing out in his final Grand Prix, but he says that he's most likely going to go on to other things. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him possibly moving to things like sports car racing or even into the DTM. Of course, also the final appearance by Benetton as a team as such. Next year they'll be replaced by the Renault factory team. And of course, next year sees the emergence of Toyota, who will be with us for the first Grand Prix of the season in Melbourne in March next year.
I might add that if you want to see that Toyota, it is on display now at the Sydney Motor Show. And unlike a few of the mock-ups that are at the Sydney Motor Show, this is the actual bona fide vehicle.
I'd say that's going to be good. As well, Toyota do have a very good website with their Formula One involvement, and it includes things like a history of their Le Mans series, a history of their World Rallying Championship background, and as well they have some quite incredible inside-the-factory footage, if you've got the right sort of internet gear, to have a look at what they're doing in that factory there in Germany preparing for Toyota's entry into Formula One in 2002. As I say, it'll be interesting how Renault goes, and of course we've seen the power that BMW is developing, and they reckon they've got an even more powerful engine for next season.
It is quite an interesting development with those changes going on in Formula One, and of course the biggest change was seen this weekend where our good friend Murray Walker takes no further part in commentary for the Formula One series. He now moves on to probably back to the BTCC in actual fact.
Well, interesting enough, Murray can't go to the British Touring Car Championship if he's going to continue working with the Beeb, because during the week the news has come through that the British Touring Car Championship is no longer going to stay with the British, with the BBC.
I think it's going to Channel 4, isn't it?
Well, there's lots of talk about who it could go, and they said that basically the problem was that the BBC coverage of the organisers.
Murray's over at ITC now, of course.
Mm. But the organisers of the BBC had become frustrated with erratic scheduling and changes to the scheduling, so they decided that it was time to pull the plug on the BBC. and the BTCC is therefore moving to another network. Now, during the week, they've said it could have been ITV, Channel 4 and Channel 5. However, it appears that Channel 4 is the most likely place where the BTCC is going to end up. The British Touring Car Championship, British Motorsport Promoters, who own the television rights to the series, has links with ITV through its deal to cover the British Superbikes in 2002, and also with Channel 4, which televised BMP's British Formula 3 and British GT Championships this year. So who eventually ends up with it is anybody's guess. But as the BTCC leading figures have said, a TVD is vital, but maybe it is time to change. Channel 4 has shown dedication to motorsport, and it will be good for the series. British Motorsport Promoters is expected to make an announcement regarding its television package for 2002 sometime in the next month. In moving back to the British Touring Car Championship, of course, the final round of the British Touring Car Championship was held last weekend at Brands Hatch. And there it was a weekend which saw Jason Plato secure the championship, but also the first win for MG. In the short sprint race, Anthony Reid was the winner in an MG, and they have overturned what has been Vauxhall's complete and utter domination of this year's British Touring Car Championship. Anthony Reid's West Surrey Racing Run ZS triumphed as the Scottish driver stayed out on the track on slick tyres, while all the other BTC touring runners pitted for wets when a mid-race shower turned to torrential rain. Plate, who's classified second results behind Reid, claimed maximum points as the MG team is ineligible for the championship this year, which helped increase his lead over his Vauxhall teammate Ivan Muller. So it was in the sprint race, Anthony Reid from Jason Plato, then Ivan Muller, James Thompson, Phil Bennett, and then the first of the others was Tim Harvey in the Alfa Romeo and Dan Eaves in the Peugeot 406. In the main race, it was Plato who came through to win, again finishing second. The race winner was actually Phil Bennett in the Egsport Vauxhall Astra. Jason Plato finished second with Dan Eaves third, Tom Ferre fourth, Gavin Piper fifth, and Gareth Howell sixth. A good finish there for the Peugeot guys, but unfortunately in that race, the first race that they had a safety car when Steve Soper crashed his car into the barrier at the exit to Druids, based in an accident similar to that which happened to Nigel Mansell in 1998. And Soper was concussed in that and taken off to hospital, but last report, he's quite okay. So the British Touring Car Championship all wrapped up for this year, and Jason Plato is the champion over Ivan Muller, with James Thompson finishing third in the championship and Phil Bennett fourth, Dan Eaves, best of the Peugeot drivers, in fifth, Steve Soper sixth, and Thomas Erdos, who only made a couple of appearances in the Lexus, he finishes seventh, Tim Harvey finishes eighth, and Kurt Luby ninth, and Ferrier rounds out the tenth. So basically a bit of a whitewash for Vauxhall, but good to see that MG is coming through. And of course, there's talk that Peugeot will be back next year, as well as a few of the others. And next year they'll also have possibly Volvo making an appearance into that championship. Last weekend as well saw the final round of the DTM and the German Touring Car Championship. Basically, we was well aware Bernd Schneider had tied up everything there in that championship, so it was sort of basically down to where people were going for placings. In the qualifying race, as they call it, which is their sprint race, it was Patrick Huisman who was the winner there in a Mercedes-Benz, surprise, surprise, from Bernd Mainlander in another Mercedes, then Peter Dunbrecht in another Mercedes. Best finish for the year for Opel in fourth and fifth, with Michael Bartels and Timo Scheider both finishing there in their Opels, and then Matthias Ekstrom in the Audi Sportsline finishing in sixth place. The joy for them there was Laurent Aiello in the Audi team. He had a multiple somersault as he entered the stadium on lap two. He lost control of the outbreak. His Audi teammate Christian Audi spun to the dirt, dug it in, and completed 2-4 rolls before coming to a rest on his side. Frenchman was unhurt. In the main race there, it was Bernd Mainlander who was the winner again. Peter Dunbrecht, then Bernd Schneider, Manuel Reuter in the Opels as well. And things going well there.
Well, joining us on the line now, we have the winners of the Ford Kartstar Series. And, winning the fifth round today was Matt Wall. Congratulations, Matthew.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And winning the series was Mark Winterbottom. Congratulations for wrapping up the series today in Melbourne.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Now, of course, it's been an interesting competition. Five rounds using the 125cc Rotax engine. How have you both found this series?
Well, for me, it was a series to prove to my to people out there that I can drive on equal equipment as best as the best carters of Australia. I highly recommend for everyone in karting to do this series because it does highlight individual driving, and that's what the whole series is for.
Now, of course, Mark, you were the runner-up last year, and now you've gone on to win the series.
Yeah, it's definitely what we wanted to do this year. Hopefully get the Formula Ford drive out of it at the end, and that's what we wanted to do at the start of the year. But, yeah, we've improved from last year, which is definitely our goal for the year.
Now, of course, both of you two are shooting for a Formula Ford drive, which is the whole goal of this series, to make your move into open-wheel competition.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to get a Formula Ford test at least, and hopefully a drive. We unfortunately cannot afford to do a series on our own, and with helping from Ford Australia, that they make it possible for us to do it.
Now, Mark, the competition this year for yourself, being the champion, and of course a lot of pressure on you as you were the runner-up to Michael Caruso last year, how have you found, particularly with people like Cox and, of course, Matthew Wall, who we've got on the line here, pushing you all the way?
Yeah, definitely. The competition is exactly the same this year as it was last year, if not better. Myself and Matt Wall and a couple other drivers, we learned a lot from last year and took it all into this year, so I think the competition was really high this year. There was a different winner pretty much at most rounds. We won two, and Matt won two, and Chris Cox won one. So it wasn't one guy that dominated, but the competition was really tough, and it was a really good series.
Matt, for yourself, how big a step up was it for you to go into the Kartstar series from doing the racing you were doing in Melbourne?
It was a lot harder because I was racing against the best drivers in Australia. It wasn't much of a giant step because I raced the Rotax 125 in Melbourne in the class that they have. So the knowledge we get from there we put into the series. But just that, like Mark said, the competition is so much harder in the Ford Stars because we've got four of Australia's best drivers competing all in the same machinery. And every time I go out in the car and race, if it's not Ford Kartstars, we learn from that and try to improve for next time.
Now, do you yourself have goals to continue in open wheelers, or do you see yourself as wanting to progress into tin tops? How do you want your career to develop at this stage?
Well, my career, if I have one, I would love to stay in Australia and race the V8 supercars. Obviously, the step up to karting is the Formula Ford, which I would love to drive. Myself personally, I would rather drive a tin top car because just the amount of support I get from Australia and the Australian fans. But if I was going to go to Europe, I would consider an open wheeler choice. But in Australia, I think the majority of the classes are tin tops, and I'll try and pursue my career in that direction.
Now, Mark, of course, this year, as well as running the Kartstar series, you were running the Victorian Formula Ford Championship, and that was courtesy of your runner-up spot and then testing last year.
Yeah, that's right. This year we've ran the state series in Victoria with for Team Spectrum. It's really good to go into next year, hopefully with one way or another, a national drive in a Formula Ford. We've learned a lot about Formula Ford just in one year, and built a good relationship with the team, which is really important. So we're really looking forward to next year.
Well, Matthew Wall, congratulations on your victory in round 5 this weekend of the Ford Kartstar Series.
Thank you very much.
And to you, Mark Winterbottom, congratulations. The championship, obviously a goal you set yourself early in the season, and it's managed to come to fruition for you.
Thank you very much.
Mark Winterbottom and Matthew Wall joining us on the line here on Inside Motorsport. Dave Langfield, of course, is looking after all the details of the Classic Adelaide Rally. And Colin, we have him on the line now.
Yes, of course, we've got David here. And once again, one of those interesting events that takes place down in South Australia is lining up again for this year. And David, once again, the Classic Adelaide Rally looks like it's going to be a ripper.
Yeah, well, it's the fifth running of the Classic Adelaide. It actually starts this Thursday and runs over the 4 days, over some, not quite sure, there's some say 27 and some say 33 special stages. for the final number of them. I haven't got all the media information yet. The maps are available like Wednesday night before the event. But they're all on closed public roads, so it's a full tarmac event, and it's shaping up to be just as big as, even better than the previous 4 years as we build up to another excellent motorsport event in South Australia.
Now, of course, as always, they seem to bring out cars from overseas and drivers to participate in this event that sort of a little bit unusual or historic or have some sort of history attached to them.
Well, we've actually got a record entry list this year, which is in excess of some 160 cars that are split into the three categories that make up the event. These 29 cars in the international parade section, which is made up of rare and exotic cars, which basically just cover the course of the event and are not timed or eligible for any awards, although they're usually the exotic toys that everyone loves to drool over. Included in that's a Mercedes 300 SLS, which was the come out from the Mercedes Museum in Germany, and that's was the 1957 USA Sports Car Championship winner. And also they've sent over a 190 SL racer, which apparently won the 1956 Macau Grand Prix sports car race. And it's really, Mercedes Museum are to be commended for what they always send over, some special exotic toys for us to enjoy on this event. Then you've got the touring section, which is for restored vehicles. But again, they're not actually competing. And that'll be led by, once again, by the 1967 Chef Camaro, with Australian touring car legend Norm Beachy driving that one. And the all-out competition section, that's for the serious competitive side of the event. And they are timed to the second over special stages, similar to what you'd see on a normal World Rally Championship event, obviously, but for cars are 30 years older. And that's nearly 80 entries in that, and they range from Ford Escorts, Falcons, Mustangs, Holden Toranas, Ferraris, Jaguars, Alfa Romeos, Minis and MGs, just to name a few.
Yeah, it's always good to see the range of cars that are involved there and also some of the personalities. Are there any other interesting drivers other than Storming Norm Beachy?
Well, we've got Ross Dunkerton, obviously Australian rally legend in his own right, in a 1970 Datsun 240Z in the competition section. Norm Beachy, as we mentioned. 1983 Le Mans winner Vern Schiepen was actually driving with his son Kerens, the navigator. This is quite interesting, in a 2001 Mercedes SLK 320. Now, this is the first time I've seen modern cars actually taking place in this event, and obviously in the parade section, which is not competing. But the media representatives here have been very helpful. When I asked them, I sent an email to them the other day, what's going on, why are these new cars in there? And they said, well, they're just modern classics. So obviously, in the effort to get name people like Vern Schiepen, et cetera. So Jack Braddon's in a 1996 Robnall, which is a replica of the Cobra, as we know. Just to get these guys into the event, they're allowing them into these sort of newer cars to get the names in there and give these guys a run, which is, you know, obviously it adds to the attraction, because one of the features of this event is that it's a very spectator-friendly rally with lots of easy viewing. It's all free because it's on closed public roads, but obviously the public can come in to spectator points they have, and it's all very well publicised in the media and the press here. They advertise where everything's going to be. And they all start from a separate point each day, like in a well-known park area like down at Glenelg, etc., which is a popular seaside area. And it gives the public a chance. All the cars are parked there first, so it gives the public a chance to walk around amongst the cars before they go off on their stages and talk to the drivers, etc. So the more names you get, the better, regardless of what sort of car they're in, I suppose. But obviously, it's nicer to see them in the older cars. Glenn Ridge will be here in a late 60s Camaro, and also Wynne Percy has come back again for another look. Both Glenn and Wynne Percy regulars in the event, but Wynne's back in a Sunbeam Tiger in the parade section.
I'd say that definitely Wynne Percy's one of those guys, a bit like John Clowney, keeps coming back to Australia because he has so many happy muttering memories here.
Well, that's right, obviously a Bathurst victory as well. Wynne, I spoke to a couple of years ago on the event. I was actually ran into him in the lift in the Hilton Hotel, which is rally headquarters, and he was just fired up. I mean, he'd had mechanical troubles throughout the day, but he just loved the event and was definitely like, yeah, I'm coming back next year. And he's come back a couple of times and just thoroughly enjoys the event, even though it is, you know, in the parade section. They still love getting out. The event actually takes in some touristy areas in and around the city of Adelaide. It's Barossa Valley, McLaren Vale and the Adelaide Hills, all of which are famous for producing some high quality wines. And apparently, according to the estimates, something like 90,000 spectators will have a look at the event over the 4 days, and something like $3.5 million will be injected into the state economy for as a benefit for it. So it's a good thing. This, the government's keen to promote it, and it's, you know, so the public can come along for free, and it's just, you know, great to look at.
Yes, obviously, it's one of those events probably that the guys who do the cellar door sales at the winery are the guys who really reap the benefits.
Yes, it certainly would. A lot of those places are coming into the time period too when their particular vintages are now becoming available. But what an interesting thing to note is that in previous years, the eligibility for the classes has been in cars built prior to 1971, so it's 1970, plus you could have a run-on if the same model continued for a couple of years. Without being changed, then you're allowed to enter a 1971, 72 sort of car. This year, they actually have a limited number of entries. Cars built up to 1976 will be accepted. This is sort of reflects the way the event's going. Like, it started in 1997. The cars were pre-1970 back then, or that was 1970 as the cut-off. Obviously, 4 or 5 years have passed. They're now looking at saying, well, okay, those cars are... classic cars are moving up in time as the classification continues. You know, as time moves on, they're saying, well, let's allow more, you know, up to 1975, 76 now. But in fairness to the people who are regular competitors and nominated earlier on in the year for competition, the outright awards will still go to the pre-1971 cars, although it does reflect the future direction of the event to let these newer cars compete in the event for four awards and points. And of course, also one of the popular things is on Friday night we'll have the street party, which is held in Goodger Street, which is sort of like a Chinatown area, and a lot of very good eating spots there, and a few pubs, and they actually line up about 20 or so cars representative of the various age groups, etc., and competition and parade section. A lot of exotic machinery sits there for 3 or 4 hours in the evening. The public can come around, wander amongst the cars, and then have a good meal. So again, that all helps the economy as well as the, you know, just enjoying the overall event.
Well, Dave, we'll be no doubt talking to you next weekend for the next edition of Inside Motorsport to get the results and see who are the winners and grinners, and maybe some of the sad tales from the Classic Gallery rallies. We know certain people have speared cars off into scenery in previous years.
Well, Mr. Brabham's not driving the Alfa Romeo this year, I think, so if, the guy that owned that, so perhaps not let him have that this year, but certainly brought it back being one piece last year. But we have some good fun in the event, as I say, it's great. The guys all enjoy it, and the public loves it as well, and it's good for the state.
Okay, Dave, we'll talk to you next week.
No worries. See you.
Dave Langfield joining us on the line from the Classic Adelaide Rally, and, of course... still to come on the show, Tony Cochran, Tony Thornton, and a whole bunch more. I hope you'll stay with us on Inside Motorsport. Last weekend at the San Remo Rally, the Frenchman, Gilles Benazzi, won his first victory of the season. The Peugeot driver, who was the overnight leader, beat his compatriot, Sebastian Loeb, in a Citroën and Didier Auriol in another of the Peugeots. Benazzi held his healthy 34.5-second lead going into the final stay, but lost ground to newcomer Loeb in the early stages. Greg Strange was at the San Remo Rally for the BBC and gives us this report.
No great joy for the Brits on this one, but delight for the French. Peugeot, Citroën, Peugeot, the 1-2-3. Gilles Benazzi's nerve holding on the final stage to come home 11.4 seconds ahead of Sebastian Loeb and Didier Auriol, finishing third. It's a second win in succession for Benazzi, who knows the local roads well. He has a home nearby. The Brits had a wretched event. Richard Burns going out 5 minutes into stage one on Friday. Colin McRae suffering a succession of niggling problems, ending up ninth overall. And Alistair McRae well down the field after rolling his Hyundai on Saturday. The Drivers' Championship is almost unchanged. Colin McRae and Tommy Mäkinen share top spots on 40 points. Carlos Sainz is now third on 33. Richard Burns fourth on 31. And Ford moved further ahead in the manufacturers. Next stop, Corsica. More asphalt in 2 weeks' time.
Greg Strange reporting.
Well, there we go. And, of course, the news, latest news being the fact that Tommy Mäkinen, there was a lot of talk this week that possibly he was going to leave Mitsubishi and move elsewhere, maybe even go to semi-retirement. Well, the confirmation day that he has left Mitsubishi, and the hot word is that he's going to Citroën to join their World Rally Car program.
Ford Kartstar Series completed its five-round championship this weekend in Melbourne. Matt Adams joins us on the line, and Matt, it has been a very interesting weekend and an interesting series with, well, one name really showing itself, Winterbottom, right throughout the five rounds.
Yeah, Mark Winterbottom secured the series win today by coming second in the final. and he went into this round as equal championship leader with Newcastle's Chris Cox. And so basically whoever beat whoever out of those two was going to win the series today. And it was a very interesting final with Cox and Winterbottom fighting it out at the front with another three or four competitors, which included Melbourne and Matthew Wall, who actually ended up winning the meeting. And in that battle, Cox was actually knocked off the track and had a DNF. So he actually still ended up coming second in the series behind Winterbottom, with Queensland's William Yarwood coming third.
How has this series developed over the last year?
Well, it's definitely really stepped up in pace as the drivers have gone to like three different states this year for the first time. They've gone from Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, and it's definitely been a lot closer at the front of the field with the Carters having quite a bit of experience with the Rotax motor now. So it's actually very easy to, you know, have a bad round, or it's very hard to have a good round. So it's been very competitive and very even for the whole series.
And it was, in fact, Howard Marsden, the general manager of Ford Racing, who really has pushed for this involvement by Ford with karting and kart racing.
Yeah, Howard's been one of the main driving forces behind it. His support of karting as both a promotional tool for Ford and also a talent search for future race car drivers, namely in their V8 supercars, but also they're looking for drivers who can go on to overseas racing as well. And, yeah, Howard's been very impressed with some of the talent that he's seen, and even the development of Mark Winterbottom over the last 2 years. As I said, he's currently doing the state series in Formula Ford, so he's going to, looks like he'll probably step up to the national series and, you know, won't be too far away from maybe a touring car drive.
Mm. He, of course, was runner-up in this series in its inaugural year too, Michael Caruso, in 2000.
Yes, Mark was the runner-up, and Michael Caruso actually is currently completing the 2001 Formula Ford Championship. So it's all part of a stepping stone process of, you know, sort of stepping the drivers up one step at a time just with Ford backing.
And for now, Mark Winterbottom is the newly crowned champion. He looks at, of course, going into the National Formula Ford Series. And, of course, once from there, really the sky's the limit. We've seen so many Formula Ford drivers head off to Europe or just stay here in the FV8 supercars racing. So certainly a name to keep an ear out for in the upcoming years.
Yeah, I think that you'll be seeing a hell of a lot more of Mark Winterbottom. And, I mean, we actually had in attendance today Greg Ritter, who just recently came fourth at the Bathurst 1000. Only 2 years ago, Greg was racing Formula Ford. So that he raced karts, and that's been his platform to step up to Formula Ford, and now he's in V8 supercars. So I think Mark is probably not too far behind that.
Now, with Mark Winterbottom, he obviously was a good deal ahead of the field, but I imagine there were some other drivers in that racing that did put up a great showing and also are people to look out for.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's not just Mark Winterbottom that's going to be a highlight of Australian motorsport's future. William Yarwood, who placed third at last year's Rotax World Challenge in Puerto Rico, he finished third in the series overall, and he's a bright spark to watch in the future, along with Victorian driver Matthew Wall, who actually he won this weekend. And he's won two rounds out of the five, so he's also going to be a strong competitor in motorsport in the future.
Well, Matt, it sounds like it had been a fantastic five rounds of racing in the Kart Stars, the Ford Kart Stars this year. Of course, it seems like so long ago now where it kicked off in Coffs Harbour.
Yeah, I mean, we've still got fond memories of Coffs Harbour. I mean, that was the place where Chris Cox turned up out of nowhere, not having not driven these karts before, and turn the tables on Mark Winterbottom, who went into that round the favourite. But, I mean, that's all history now, and Mark Winterbottom's won the series. So, you know, we're hoping that we can get back to Coffs Harbour next year, because that is one of our favourite venues.
And, of course, for people who want to get more information about making the step to the Kart Stars, a lot of information is available on the website, which is www.kartstars.com.au.
Yeah, correct.
Matt Adams, thanks very much for joining us here on Inside Motorsport, and we wish you all the best for the 2002 Ford Kart Star Series.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Tony Thornton is the chairman of Andrew. And Tony, it's been quite an interesting and probably a bit of a dramatic time for drag racing in Australia, with a lot of the news that has been coming out over the last couple of months has not been, well, great news for competitors and fans of drag racing alike. Firstly, of course, with the insurance dramas going on in Australia and right around the world at the moment, quite a significant hike in liability insurance is going to be one thing that competitors are going to note right throughout this 2001-2002 season.
Yeah, I think it's fair. It's certainly been a challenge for us, but we're not alone in that. Some of the other motorsport codes have encountered bigger problems, notably Speedway, I think, who I'm told on Friday resolved all their issues for the coming season, so they'll get back to normal in the next week or so, I think. But we've been working a bit closely with them on that, because all motorsports have faced similar problems, and a range of other sports not involving motor racing, and also just recreational activities. In anything but a humorous reference, things like the ferret races in Colac in Victoria and the World Rabbit Skinning Championships have basically not got any future because they can't insure the little events that they're part of.
It has been quite a troublesome time in the world at the moment, but with the collapse of HIH and other insurers, it does mean that rather than the quite healthy competition, or perhaps not overly healthy competition that was going on, is now being replaced by a bit more of a what you call a rationalist approach in the way they are insuring events.
Well, very rational, unfortunately, I suppose. I think it's fair to say that most people in this sort of area were a little spoiled through the late 90s with insurance costings that by today's standards were artificially low. There are a wide range of factors, and really the unfortunate events of early September didn't make things much worse, except that they reduced our ability to shop around even further, and it probably also means that rather than seeing a spike in insurance prices that might have lasted 12 to 18 months, we may be looking at things being like this for 4 to 5 years at least. And there are issues like the changing attitude towards litigation in Australia, the blame mentality, I suppose, whenever anyone runs into tough times or whatever, it always seems to be someone else's fault, and the legal system is tailored to address those things, and in many cases that's just as well for all of us. But like many things, it does get abused, and unfortunately the insurance cost area is where we're starting to see the impact of that.
Mm. Now, obviously, you are putting everything in place so that the national series, will be running without too many hiccups. But one big piece of news, after Andra successfully became a promoter late last year with the Nationals, we hear, and a lot of competitors are excited about this, that Willowbank will be hosting the Nationals for season 2001-2002.
Yes, certainly there were a number of successes associated with us running the Nationals this year, but unfortunately for the first time since the event started in Melbourne in the early 90s, the weather was against us, and we did incur something of a financial loss. But for the association, it was certainly a great exercise. The races got behind it, and it proved that a number of things were possible that some people may have doubted before. But one of the things that's arisen in the last few months, or the 2 months or so, is that Calder and Adelaide have reviewed their prize money structures and elected to remove prize money from a major part of their drag racing activities, which, if you think about the position of the Australian dollar, the fact that a lot of equipment is imported, things are just getting generally expensive anyway. There is the insurance thing, which will impact on the races. Also, the cost of travelling is more. The GST has had a bit of an impact. I mean, there's a whole range of things. It's been a pretty challenging year for everybody. And with the removal of prize money, very few people in drag racing rely on the prize money to fund their racing. It's just not possible. But from a philosophical point of view, the racers see it as the promoter putting something directly back into the sport where it affects them directly. And to remove it without giving, tangible reasons, I suppose, and also without any real explanation whatsoever, the races in Victoria and South Australia decided that they weren't that enthusiastic about racing. Andra made some decisions fairly quickly once we were informed officially of that, and we surveyed the races in both states as soon as we could just to make sure that we were acting in a way that they supported, I suppose, and certainly the results indicated that was the case.
It has to be said that you have done everything in your power over the last 2.5 years to ensure that drag racing still is having a presence in New South Wales, South Australia and Victoria, but really it has been quite an uphill battle with people sort of biting off their nose despite their face.
Yeah, you could say that, Craig, and I mean, it's... I still maintain, and it's a proven fact, that the success of drag racing through the 90s was mainly a result of the cooperation between all the various parties involved, certainly the racers and the promoters who combined to put on a good show, and everyone got out of it most of what they were looking for. With some of the economic pressures we see now, it's harder for all those groups to continue agreeing totally on everything, but certainly I see... if we maintain that as a target, that's really the way that drag racing is going to sustain its position. And really, with what's happening in Melbourne and Adelaide, the commercial pressures on those two tracks are probably greater than anywhere else, given their structure and what have you. And I actually understand their position to some degree. It's rather the way it was delivered, rather than the decision itself, that's created the problem, and we're still working hard to get through it. There are a number of people outside those states, particularly our Group 1 people, who have been left in a very difficult position, some with major sponsors, some who race professionally, who are now basically limited to opportunities in Perth and Brisbane. And that won't work for them, of course. But on the positive side, allowing a little bit of patience, the Adrenaline Project in Melbourne is going from strength to strength. We've been dealing with them a lot lately. I'm more confident than ever that that's going to go ahead now, and hopefully we'll see some activity there in late 2002. The Jim Reid and David Cook project in Sydney is moving along. It's working hand in hand with the government, which gives us some certainty with the whole thing, but of course requires a very complex system of development and planning, as the government does, so that may be a little slower than hoped for, but we're still looking at a 12 to 18 month time frame. And of course, a bit close to where you are in Canberra, Jeff Devlin and his team is having some joy there.
Of course, one of the hardest things has been over the years trying to keep competitor numbers and to keep competitors interested in drag racing as opposed to going road racing and everything like that, whilst you have had these down periods in those states. But on the other hand, street competitors with regular road cars, I know before Canberra closed, my Hyundai was up there putting on a great show. In fact, one time someone's tour converter didn't lock up and drew over away from a GTHO. So that sort of thing has really brought people at the ground level back into drag racing, and certainly has been a great way of bringing people through the ranks. It's just they don't have the ranks to go through in some of these states at the moment. You mentioned about the Adrenaline program. Of course, Steve Betts did his damnedest about 3 years ago now to try and get the Heathcote complex up and running. Are there any promoters in there that can give Southeast Victoria some sort of hope?
Yeah, the since he left the Heathcote operation, it's basically operated at a local level, providing opportunities for the off street guys and stuff. They really haven't expressed any interest at all in getting involved with the Andra program again. But the Adrenaline site is quite close to Melbourne, out at Deer Park, and I think one of the issues for drag strips now, and there are some very successful regional tracks, places like Mildura, we call Darwin Regional, although it's in a capital city technically, but there are a number of country tracks that are really making it work now. And all the tracks, those and the major city tracks, rely on a fairly steady schedule of off-street events, which are great for the people like yourself and your Hyundai, Craig.
Yeah, that's
and also, and also some of the lower-level competition cars who want to race with some more regularity. And that really provides the bread and butter for the tracks. It provides a great opportunity for the guys to come off the street and do it safely. And certainly where location is important when you do things like that, because people don't want to go out and run their street car and then perhaps have a mechanical problem with it and be faced with the problem of getting it home. So it is important that those events where they run almost on a weekly basis in some cases are not too far out of town. So the regional tracks now, certainly places like Mildura with the reduced activity in Melbourne and Adelaide, will be seeing a lot more support from the bigger cities. I think Mildura is around the 400 kilometre mark from Adelaide, a little bit further from Melbourne, but they get a fairly steady stream of southern competitors going up there. And to get back to our announcement that the Nationals will be at Willowbank, it's not that far away, being mid-January. It'll be a bit warm up there, but then we've been warm in Melbourne in February. We've had it around 41 degrees. So I think the January event will get huge support, and certainly for us drag racers, the Nationals is still that special one day of the year that it started out as in 1965, and despite the success of the national championships and all the other things that go on in drag racing, for the sport, it's that special event. It's like our Bathurst.
And of course, with Willowbank, they've shown that they can organise an event of that magnitude, with the Konica Winter Nationals becoming such a major part of the drag racing scene here in Australia.
No question about that, Craig, and certainly the organisation of Willowbank and the layout and everything else, I've got no doubt they'll do the event the justice it deserves. And Willowbank have clearly stated, and it was one of my concerns, that they certainly have no intention of taking the Nationals on board, but they see it as an important factor in the sport that they would like to help us keep going, and they'll do a great job of that, I'm sure.
Would it be now that the move has come through these circumstances that next year it might be Perth's turn to host the Nationals, because that is, of course, the newest facility running at the moment in the country?
Well, the only thing with Perth, of course, Craig, is its distance, and we refer to those things as the tyranny of distance, and never a truer word was spoken. It's a long way to go, and we did run the Nationals at Perth in 1991, and while the response from interstate wasn't that large in terms of the competitors who made the trip, of course, it was still the Nationals. It still had that special atmosphere about it. I'd like to think that in some point in the future, the wonderful new Kwinana complex will host one of the major events in the country. It certainly deserves to. The Western Australians deserve to see it, and I don't think anyone would argue with me too much when I say that the West Australian government and the Kwinana management have delivered one of the best drag strips outside of North America.
And of course, this season, having it right on our doorstep now, it's going to once again prove to be an interesting one. We've seen the 300 mile an hour pass. In fact, we've seen a couple of them now. So I guess what we're looking for is paired passes at that sort of speed to be the goal for this season.
Yeah, it's, I think the point has always been that the cars would either run 300 or more, or run a competitive elapsed time. And certainly when Jim delivered the goods at Willowbank last year, he proved that you could do both at the same time. Certainly those sorts of performances are very commonplace in America now, but it doesn't take anything away from the effort of the Australian guys, because some of those challenges we mentioned earlier to all drag races affect the top fuel guys more than anything. And apart from costs and everything else, they don't have anywhere near the testing opportunities of their American counterparts, and you do need to do it often to do it good. So while our performances here are mightily impressive, they are a little bit behind what the Americans are doing, but I don't think they are any less of an achievement.
Well, Tony, it has been a pleasure to catch up with you this afternoon, and we do wish everyone involved in the 2000 and won 2002 Andra Drag Racing season. All the very best, and we look forward to hopefully seeing some more announcements over the next few weeks about, of course, movements back into New South Wales and particularly the ACT, because we do know that there's some stuff building up in both those areas.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be some interesting and positive announcements over the next month or so, Craig, and certainly don't hesitate to talk to us at any time.
Welcome to the Honda Champ Car Update. I'm Jim Murphy. Join me now as we make a visit to the fast-paced world of the kart series.
Gil DeFerrin made it two in a row as he led wire-to-wire from the pole to take the victory in the Texaco Haviland Grand Prix of Houston. The win vaulted DeFerrin around Kenny Brack in the championship battle with only three races remaining in the season. The weekend, however, got off to a contentious start as CART announced the series would change to a 3.5-liter normally aspirated engine formula beginning in 2003. CART CEO Joe Heitzler explains the decision.
The most important thing about this announcement is the importance of our fans and the importance of our team owners and the importance of our engine suppliers and chassis suppliers to CART. And we felt that when we formed the engine committee, that we had several goals in mind, what I'd like to share with you. We wanted to reduce the horsepower and thereby slow the cars. And in so doing, we were hoping to improve the quality of racing. Number two, we want to retain all of our present engine manufacturers and attract additional manufacturers to our series. The third one objective was we wanted to reduce costs to the teams and to the engine manufacturers. And this implies a configuration that will have some substantive to it in the amount of years. And number four, we wanted to, as an objective, have a fair and equitable system of engine supply.
According to Senior Vice President of Racing Operations John Lopes, the new formula will share some common components with that of the IRL, but will also leave room for technological innovation.
It would be avoiding the obvious that commonality is something that we agreed upon yesterday was important. However, we also intend to stay true to the high-tech formula of CART, and therefore we intend that there will be a certain amount of sophistication in this normally aspirated power plant and a certain amount of R&D that heretofore probably hasn't been seen in those power plants in their current configuration. It will take us 30 to 60 days to work out these specific parameters with regard to the configuration, max bore diameter, minimum main bearing diameter, and such.
The announcement was not greeted well by any of the current CART engine manufacturers. Honda and Ford immediately replied that having an engine ready for 2003 would be impossible, while Toyota said that they could only supply an engine if it was exactly the same as the IRL engine already in development. Even in that case, Toyota maintains they have no desire to be a sole supplier for engines in the series. While Honda made the most noise in the paddock on Friday, they also made the most noise on the track on Sunday as DeFerrin bettered Dario Franchitti to the line for his second win of the season.
As we get to the end of the year, you know, every race has a little bit of an extra importance, and, you know, I was very aware of that coming into this weekend. You know, if you have a good weekend, you can certainly put yourself in a very good position on the final stretch. And certainly that's what happened today. But like you said, I mean, the job ain't done yet. I mean, you cannot underestimate the opposition here. The guys are very, very strong. So really, not even commemorating this one all that much. I mean, already thinking about Laguna and trying to get the job done there too.
Franchitti moved up from his sixth place starting position to come home second.
Qualifying yesterday was a couple of real Banzai laps, really hanging on to it. And in the race, it was a case of just picking guys off when I could, pushing guys into mistakes. And I had probably the most fun part of the race for me was the middle segment when Gilles and I were I think both our crews sort of told us to turn up the fuel, use as much fuel as we wanted on new tires. And I was pushing as hard as I could, and I can see he was pushing pretty hard. And that's when it's a lot of fun because you're absolutely giving everything. And sometimes a little bit more. It was like qualifying laps all the time, just one after the other.
Memo Gidley and teammate Bruno Junqueiro ran afoul of one another during Saturday morning's practice session, earning neither the admiration of owner Chip Ganassi. However, Gidley redeemed himself with his second podium finish of the year, coming home third.
We had a pretty good car in practice, and we changed a few things in qualifying. I don't know, just missed the window a little bit, and I just wasn't, I couldn't drive it really that fast. And it just ended up we qualified at the back. I got clear laps, and that's just what it was. So we made a bunch of changes overnight to try and conserve the rear tires. And my engineer, he had some really good suggestions, and I was a little skeptical for sure. But, out on the racetrack, it worked. And I could run, fast laps on lean fuel, and I was, never any richer than six, and I was running on eight for most of the time, which is pretty lean, and getting good mileage and doing good lap times. So Team Target gave me a great car, and here I am. Dreams come true sometimes.
Here's how they finished in the Texaco Haviland Grand Prix of Houston. The winner was Gilles Deferrin over Dario Franchitti. Memo Gidley, Tora Takagi, and Elio Castroneves round out the top five. Then it was Cristiano D'Amata, Kenny Breck, Christian Fittipaldi, Max Pappas, and Patrick Carpentier through the top 10. 11th through 15th, Jimmy Vassar, Tony Kanaan, Brian Herta, Adrian Fernandez, and Shinji Nakano. 16th through 20th, Max Wilson, Casey Mears, Scott Dixon, Alex Tagliani, and Maurizio Guzman. 21st through 25th, Michael Andretti, Roberto Moreno, Bruno Junqueiro, Paul Tracy, and Michelle Jourdain Jr. Rounding out the 26-car field, Oriol Servia. The time of the race, 1 hour 54 minutes, 42.336 seconds for an average speed of 79.521 miles an hour. The margin of victory, 3.430 seconds. With the win, Gilles Deferrin retakes the championship lead over Kenny Brack, 163-153. Elio Castroneves is third with 133, followed by Michael Andretti with 125, and Dario Franchitti with 105. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series is their annual trek to the historic Laguna Seca Raceway next weekend.
Each week, the Honda Champ Car Update brings you the latest news from the world of karts, straight from the track and directly from the driver's mouth. This internet experience is brought to you by the folks at Honda. Racing is part of who Honda is, and you can see that by visiting www.hondaracing.com.
Well, as I mentioned, Tony Cochran, of course, in charge of the V8 Supercar Series with Avesco, the chairman. Tony, it's been a very hectic 2001 season for you so far.
Yeah, no, it's been a fantastic year so far, and we're very excited at the moment about the prospect of, for the first time ever, taking the whole championship offshore with our next round in New Zealand. So still a couple of things in front of us, and then, of course, the new closing format for the year with the new event at Sandown in the last weekend of November.
Of course, Sandown returning to the calendar this year as the grand finale, and I'm sure everyone's hoping that it can be a finale to remember.
Yeah, I sincerely hope so. It's a great track and very good fan facilities, and we wanted to finish the championship in a major capital city. We've had a lot of pressure from corporates to do that, and it's nice that we're now in this position. In fact, we've signed a 5-year deal with the promoter there to end the championship at Sandown.
For Avesco and for V8 Supercars, how important has the last few years been for building the brand name and ensuring the future of the division?
Oh, look, it's been excellent. I mean, there's no doubt that in the last 5 years, V8 Supercars has really stamped its authority on being the number one motorsport in this country. And, you've only got to look at the enormous increase in both our fans attending live at the track and our unbelievable increase in our television ratings over that 5 years.
There has been a lot of talk by people about the predominance of street races coming to be so important to the series, at the expense, I might add, of normal circuits. How do you balance up that wanting for having major cities involved like Canberra and Adelaide, and also being able to ensure that there are motor racing drivers coming up through the ranks that are serviced by permanent facilities?
Well, I think no one's done more for permanent facilities since the arrival of Avesco on the scene 5 years ago. In that time, there's been a couple of brand new tracks built, Willowbank in Queensland and Darwin up in the Northern Territory. Because of our help, there's been other tracks that have been able to upgrade. Oran Park's done a significant upgrade. We've now been able to help the West Australian track of Barbagella get some money out of their government towards upgrading their pit facilities. All of these things benefit all levels of Australian motorsport, of course. They don't just benefit Avesco. We're only at these places for one weekend of the year. So we've left, as it were, in our wake, a fairly healthy fitting out and upgrade of many of the permanent circuits in this country. The street circuits, people like to talk up the fact, you know, that there's so many of those and, you know, they've taken over permanent circuits everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. If we really examine the truth of that statement, of course, we only do two street races at the moment, one in Canberra where there is no permanent facility in any case, and one in Adelaide. And, of course, in Adelaide, we provide Malala with a round of the Konica series. So, if you really weigh it up and look at it, take the emotion out of it, the overall balance we strike in 13 appearances each year, it's very, very heavily still in favour of going to permanent circuits.
With the calendar, of course, released this week for next season, it does prove that, things are going on bigger and better, and a format change, which I think a lot of fans are saying is desperately needed.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've changed the formats enormously for this year, and that's worked very, very well. The only two places where we didn't change it really was Calder and Barbagello, but in both cases because of the lack of a permanent pit facility. We're very happy with the new format. The fans are obviously very happy. We've had a record year in terms of live attendances and certainly a record year in terms of our television ratings. So, you know, we're quite happy, and this sort of format will now stay for some time. We've announced a new enduro-style weekend at Eastern Creek for late April of next year, and we'll be announcing all the details on that as we get towards the end of this year, towards the Sandown Round.
Now, of course, this week, with the dramas that have been going on around the world, it's also had some talk that you might have to step up and fill the IndyCar shoes.
Well, I'm still of the opinion that I know, having sat on the kart board for 18 months, 2 years, I'm still of the opinion that the IndyCar teams will come to Australia, unless, of course, something more happens in America. But I believe they'll be here, and I believe it'll be a first-class weekend. It'll be the V8's last appearance at Indy, of course.
Playing devil's advocate here for a moment with you, if it was to transpire that you had to take the headlining act, would you then use as an opportunity to test what you're going to do next year? Because obviously the Indy 300 is a 300 kilometer event, which is what you're going to be using in 2002.
Well, you're reacting to rumour there that we're going to run 300k races. We haven't confirmed that.
Oh, well, you could do it now if you like.
Yeah, well, we could. look, if we take over because the IndyCar teams decide it's safer to stay home in a couple of weeks' time, look, we'll have to sit down and review that with the teams as to what format it will be. But at this point in time, we haven't been asked, so we really haven't even given it any thought. The only thing we can say with any certainty is it couldn't be a round of the championship.
Yes. With the new season, we touched on that just a moment ago, but with the new season coming up, was there any discussion or any pressure being put on you to perhaps use the Konica series as a Saturday act to build up the whole weekend of racing that you do have?
I wouldn't say there was pressure. It was a suggestion put forward, but most importantly, our Konica series entrants were very, very keen to stay standalone. Network 10 were very keen to see us run it as a separate entity, and our sponsor Konica were very keen to let it keep building. It's built again this year over last year, and we see no reason why it won't keep building again for next year. So I think there was no real necessity to put the two of them together. Obviously, the Shell Championship Series more than stands on its own 2 feet and draws, you know, massive crowds everywhere it goes now. The Konica Series is a very good development series, and, you know, we're doubling the prize money in that championship next year for our entrants, and we're very confident the Konica Series will continue to grow. We're very happy with our first Konica race at Bathurst this year. We're going to seek to put that in a better time slot on the Saturday next year. But, no, look, overall, the Konica Series has proven to be an outstanding success and gives young drivers a real chance to get used to our cars before hopefully they get caught up in the cut and thrust of the Main Shell Championship Series.
I know there is talk next year that you're going to have something like 43 cars fighting out for 33 spots on the grid.
What, at the Shell Series?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's possible, of course. We do limit the Shell Championship Series these days to 32 cars and most of our events. And obviously, if more than that want to run, then they've got to come along and qualify, and they do run the risk of not getting a start on Saturday or Sunday.
That has made for some exciting Friday afternoons.
Yeah, it has. And, look, that's not really what we want to achieve, to be perfectly frank. We really would like competitors who can't cut the mustard in the Shell Championship Series really to run in Konica and leave the Shell Championship Series to those teams that can afford the entire championship year. It's a free country, and if they want to come and try and pre-qualify, then they're certainly able to do so.
Mm. And finally, your relationship with the 10 Network now extends for a multi-year contract. How hard has it been to deal with Channel 10 knowing that they now have football rights for every Saturday?
Well, it hasn't been hard at all. In fact, it's worked very much to our advantage because we think we'll get a lot of cross-promotional benefits out of their football coverage. We have a relationship in our new 5-year agreement which guarantees the championship will be shown live or as live, depending on time slots in various states. And on Saturday and Sunday afternoons, and 10 will work that in around their commitments with the AFL, and if there is a clash, they will give that particular game off to Channel 9.
Mm. It has been a criticism in some of the chat rooms that you see on the website and talking to fans that Channel 10 haven't added anything to the television coverage of motor racing since they've taken over, with the exception of time slot. They haven't really increased... for argument's sake, even simple things like graphics are still the same graphics as we saw on Channel 7. Just little things that every year used to change over at 7. People have said we're still seeing 5 years ago what was going on the screens.
Yeah, I think that's pretty harsh criticism. I think people tend to have very short memories when it suits them. The truth of the matter is, of course, if we go back 6 years ago to the good old days of the other broadcaster, most of the Shell rounds were shown at 11:30 or midnight on a Sunday night, so it was hardly what you call very convenient. Secondly, of course, most people knew the results well and truly before they even sat down to watch it, whereas all of our V8 rounds are live. The extent of the coverage has grown massively in the 5 years. We're going to end up this year doing about 76 hours, I think it is, in total live coverage of V8s. In Channel 7's last year, they did, of live coverage, they did less than 22 hours. So, you know, I don't think the criticism's particularly fair. And, you know, the new timing package that Avesco's worked with all this year, which now throws up split times on the screen, is a brand new innovation. And that we'll be able to relay that whole information onto the screen live next year. So there'll be quite a bit more time and information available next year on the screens. We've introduced top 10, top 15 shootouts. Certainly 10 don't show all of those, but they show quite a few of them. So I think that 10 have done a tremendous job with the coverage. It's fully digital. I realise a lot of people don't have digital sets yet, but when they do and they've got the black the box decoders, you'll find that at quite a few of our major events you can actually pick up three different channels of our rounds. So there are a lot of things in the loop that are that will transpire and come through as time goes on. And, you know, I have to say, I think they've done an exceptionally good job of motorsport coverage. I think they've brought it up to a standard that's now level with the other sports, whereas it was very much foundering in the background at Network 7.
Now, Bathurst, of course, the controversy is the long weekend. And will we see the V8s back on the long weekend?
No, unfortunately, because of the NRL moving there, making this decision to run, always run their grand final on the long weekend, both our promoter, IMG at Bathurst, and Network 10, the TV network, they both wish us to have a standalone weekend. They don't wish our event to be overshadowed by any other sporting events, so we're going to the weekend after the long weekend, as we did this year. And that will become the standard weekend for us.
Finally, are you still enjoying the job up there running the powers of Avesco?
Oh, yeah, look, it's like any job. You have moments where it's good and moments where it's bad. But, look, no, overall, we're pretty, I think we're pretty happy with the way things are going. And 5 years on, you know, I certainly, I'm endorsed as chairman, I think it's for another 2 years. I certainly plan on seeing those 2 years out, and you know, we'll have a bit of a review of look at it then.
Well, Tony, thanks for your time here on Inside Motorsport today.
My pleasure.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.